Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, prayerprescriptions.com, and the author of the upcoming book, Prayer Prescriptions, Spiritual Remedies for Long-Lasting Health. So today is the last day of my virtual book tour for the book, Prayer Prescriptions, and Lawrence Ball will be interviewing me on this program. So joining me now is Lawrence Ball. Hello, Lawrence.
Greetings to you, Kate. Hi there.
Greetings to you from the other side of the world. Wow. Cool.
And the other end of the day, too, it looks like.
Well, is it like noon there?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Noon. Yeah. Not so, it's not like night yet.
No.
Not night. So today is day number 21. Wow. This is so cool. It's been fun, though.
Yes, I don't know of anyone else who's done a virtual book tour. Certainly, you don't have the travel expenses that you would have doing a real one.
That's right. Over these 21 days, I have had, it's almost like cataclysmic changes have taken place in my life. It's very interesting. But you know, when you kind of let go and start releasing things, like through prayer, and prayer is sort of like a great purifier in a way, then things will happen because things, major things will happen. But I'm wondering if it's also because of the eclipse. Have you noticed anything in your life that's been kind of major, like change?
Yes, these things are like watershed energies, definitely.
Mhm. Yeah.
I would say so. Sticking my neck out a bit here, it's very likely that there's a lot more to where the stars and the planets and everything are than just physical objects. Each of them is a set of energies, quite powerful energies.
Yes, the Pleiades thing. Wow, that's another thing. I don't know what that means, but it just sounds...
Well, Pleiades is, as some people think, that's where the most evolved extraterrestrial civilizations are in relation to our solar system, at least in our locality anyway. So that's particularly significant.
Has there been more extraterrestrial activity to your knowledge lately, or is that something that we wouldn't know about just because that kind of thing is censored in our media? But I haven't read it anywhere. I haven't read about it. But I would assume that there has been.
Well, yes, it's quite controversial. There's heavy suppression of both activity in that realm, and also what we have gleaned and also kept secret. I'm not involved in it, but from the conversations I've had with people and the things I've read, it's become quite clear to me that we are on the brink of a massive change in that department.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter whether it's top secret in your government or in my government. It is what it is, and we have life in other realms of the universe, and why should that be frightening? You know, why should that be frightening? Actually, it should be common sense, total common sense, that we have brothers and sisters and all reaches of the galaxy.
Yes. Well, it makes sense to me. I mean, I've always been absolutely fascinated by the whole prospect of, ever since I started reading Dan Dare comics when I was a schoolboy,
mm-hmm.
about this pilot of the future, as he was called. I was completely hooked, and of course, you know, in retrospect, it's a pity that the film Star Wars depicts us taking conflict into outer space, because I think that's a huge mistake. I don't think the kind of conflict we have here exists elsewhere, at least not with the people that are visiting us at the moment.
Well, unfortunately, you know, when you think about it, our country is so focused on war and conflict and that sort of thing that it only stands to reason that that's what the movies would be reflecting. They, you know,
yes.
Hollywood is trying to, you know, or Hollywood or whatever kind of, you know, in your country, it's other. I think you have different film experiences for the people. Here in this country, it's all pretty warlike and violent.
Yeah.
I
think there's certainly. Now, one of the reasons crop circles isn't circulated more in the media is because it would mean people would have to stop asking deep questions. And deep questions don't seem to go with a media that circulates news of drama and victimhood.
Yeah. So we can't look to Hollywood really to enlighten. I mean, they really need to be. So we have to look to ourselves to enlighten. This is what prayer prescriptions is all about, and this is why we need to, you know, put forth the messages that we know to be true, we know to be right and loving, and which I need to tell you then. So my next step here would be to do 30-day blog challenges that focus on certain controversial topics in a spirit of prayer. Like the things that we need to heal in this world virtually have to do with world. I think we need world peace. We need to abolish the death penalty in our country. And there's just all different kinds of maladies in our society that need prayer. So to concentrate on 30-day blogs, short, sweet prayers for certain maladies in our society, and to get others to interact with that in a civil way, civil, because you know how certain topics bring out so much anger in people. I don't know why. But.
Well, yes, because they're carrying some, yes.
So that's what I wanted to tell you that I am up to next. And it's not going to take much, you know, it's just something that I think would be a cool thing to do with prayer.
Yes.
We have to focus. It's not praying for anything. It's like building an environment where contemplation and slowing down can occur to solve some of these problems.
Well, prayer, in a sense, can be understood as a state rather than a request, or it can be both. It's a very general word, isn't it?
It is a gentle word, yeah.
I meant general, actually.
Oh, general. General.
It refers
yeah,
to
yeah.
different. It's
yeah.
gentle as well.
Right. But general, yeah, because so many interpretations can be brought out of the word. I mean,
yes.
And another thing is that Christianity has co-opted the whole practice of prayer. And that's really unfair because all the world religions have at their base, you know, at their foundation, prayer as a way of communicating with the divine. And so often people, and that's why people kind of shy away from the prayer prescription ideas because they think it's Christian They don't want anything to do with it. A lot of people, are, even agnostics or even people who don't believe in God, need to realize that prayer isn't necessarily something that they can't do just because of that, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Well, religion is a double-edged sword because it sometimes helps, but it also hinders.
Yeah.
I usually try to be polite, but I must confess I find that religion, rather like people with the news media, does not encourage questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like, what's the word, opium.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was studying Sufi Ibn Arabi for some years, and I went back to church after having not been there for a while. I'm the age 20, early 20s, and I could not believe how much there was in the words that was just getting missed. Or at least that I'd missed, and it can't speak for anybody else, but I suspect it's a grief.
And
just that one phrase, the peace of God which passeth all understanding, the idea that peace could pass understanding, it's just enormous, you know, as a statement, because in our society, understanding is valued above peace. And it's certainly not understood in the context of peace.
Well, doesn't it make it becomes controversial to imagine that Jesus would be totally he just wouldn't like these wars, you know, and that we don't have a real Christian nation if we're engaging in violent surveillance, violent suppression of people. And then going off and killing thousands, if not millions, of women and children. What in heck are people thinking?
I think the death toll in Iraq is something like, is it in the 600s or the 700 thousands of civilians?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And I know I'm going to get really controversial now, but the NATO summit that took place over the weekend to me was fascinating because the Iraqi war veterans and also the veterans who had engaged in war in Afghanistan had young Afghanistan women with them as they were throwing their medals away. And to me, that was, I mean, I didn't quite get that. When you and I were talking on Monday, I didn't quite get that part of what they were doing. I had either forgotten or whatever. So they stood in front of the audience and they get these medals since 9/11 that are anti-terrorist kind of, heroic medals that they've gotten. And then all the other medals that they've gotten too, in war, they actually threw towards the places where all the people were.
I would have done something a little bit more imaginative with that, maybe melted them down and cast them into something that was...
a creative act, maybe. Yeah, something, a sculpture.
I don't know, but certainly what they did was very good, and Amy Goodman drew attention to it, which is also excellent.
I love her. Yeah, let's put a beam of light on Amy Goodman. I don't know how she does it, but she continuously does. And I don't know how she does it in the sense, though, that it's so difficult to take the stuff that she continuously shines a light on that we all need to
see. She's part of a network. I mean, people don't get anywhere unless they're part of a network. You know, they have to work with others who are doing complementary.
Yeah.
And she must know a lot of those people she interviews. And she talk to them, and they give each other advice, you know. And it's all... That's the way the world changes, is that people get together and they work as a group or a team.
Yes. And Amy Goodman was in that movie Thrive, so she is she has a spiritual interest in all of these things, I think. It doesn't come across in the program very much, but I think it might be her spiritual interest in all of this changing the world is what keeps her going.
Yes, when you've got good ideals, you tend to... The other things don't become such big problems. You think you'll wear around them more easily.
Yeah, so it was quite a statement, though, to have the Afghanistan women with them.
Mm-hmm.
That was very, very powerful. And it actually had made more impact, I believe, than if they hadn't been there. Just beautiful, beautiful women, you know, that were standing with these soldiers. Not necessarily standing with them when they threw the medals, but they were standing with them throughout the demonstrations.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine had gone there with his friend and took some pictures. There was a dictator from Ethiopia at the NATO summit, and these beautiful, beautiful Ethiopian people went to demonstrate and actually not really do anything but stand there with their children and their beautiful colors with the flags of their nation. And the police force in this country and the police force that was out during the weekend was like a military force within itself. And I have a picture that I haven't done anything yet with. I think I'll put it up on the next 30-day, one of my 30-day blog fix. And what it is are these very intense military people with guns and bullets facing these beautiful, peaceful Ethiopian people as if it was holding their children. And they're smiling with love. Well, it's quite oh, my heavens. Well, anyway, you get my picture.
Yes.
So these things are what we need to heal. We need to bring to the forefront and through with prayer. This is something that I feel like prayer prescriptions can help. What can I do with prayer prescriptions to help bring a light on for healing? And these sorts of things that are going on in the American society need to be highlighted. And I think that's what I would like to do in my next step with prayer prescription.
Hmm. Yeah, there are also different levels of prayer. Some people are more given to internal work, such as mystics or counselors or people who are trying to help understanding or resolution. And other people are more to do with taking action, maybe making examples in science or politics.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I feel there's definitely different ways to apply the prayerful and the meditative energies.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what prayer and meditation are is a bringing about of a deeper union between the soul and the personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you find this in Alice Bailey's teachings quite clearly. That's something she underlines quite strongly. I think that's a very beautiful image, the idea that we need to have more connection between our surface self and the deeper, more profound self. And I think that's true of us and of the world. And maybe that's what prayer and meditation can help us do.
Yeah, because the personality will ultimately be thrown off when we pass through the veil, you know. But our soul is always with us. It's unchanging. So that is what prayer and meditation do. They keep us, they get us in touch with the infinite, basically. With the primordial force that, I don't know how to explain it. The thing that gently takes us through life if we pay attention to it. But if we don't pay attention to it, it's a lot. That's why people are in a state of confusion and angst and suffering so much emotional suffering, I mean, because of just losing their grip on this eternal flow. They've only focused on their personality.
Yes, well, I mean, different people are at different stages. I mean, some people are more living on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people who are very successful in a worldly way haven't really got to the point where they're beginning to see the limitations of outward success. So they perhaps are more at an earlier stage of integrating those things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. One doesn't like to judge too much, but
that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, I mean, it might sound like we're judging.
General understanding.
Yeah.
as a general understanding, I think, you know, any activity is going to benefit my deeper integration. But, you know, there are obviously all sorts of different degrees of integration going on amongst people, whatever they might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but how can we know what people are really feeling and contemplating in their private moments? It might, you know, we all go out into the world and we all take our personalities with us. So, and rarely, except in very close friendships or, well, even in the patient-nurse relationship, you know, you can delve into deep contemplation with people. But in general, we take our personalities out into the world and we talk about the weather. We talk about men, talk about cars.
Yeah.
You know, men have, you know, you have this, even women.
Or free energy in the future. That's what.
Free energy in the future. That would be a good topic.
Free energy is the new car.
And generally speaking, people don't delve into deep topics. But what do we know what happens in the private moments? We don't.
Well,
we don't know.
But we all have to somehow, I know this is a delicate dance between remaining in a state of cluelessness, which is healthy for a spiritual person,
mm-hmm.
on the one hand, but also getting clues. We can still get clues on what Houston Vetter would call calibration. We don't necessarily have to make a judgment, but we can kind
mm-hmm.
of use our consciousness to measure things a bit and just see how we do have to some extent, evaluate where we're going and which people are important to us and what are the most important things to be focusing on, and get some idea of how to empathize with other people. And so we do need some degree of steerage, some degree of navigation, and that does require some calibration, even if it's, you know, to get some idea of what was going on out there without fixing it too hard.
Well, it is true that when you purposely focus on compassion as a calibration that you wish to bring with you out into the world, then people mm-hmm. respond immediately to that. It's a relief to people to feel compassion from people. Other people, and then they will, and people just absolutely go right with it, fall in step with it, I think.
Yeah.
But it's it is when Houston, speaking of Houston, when he was on my radio show, I was pretty impressed by his ability not to judge. And he had a pretty detached, or I don't know if that's the word, you know, non-judgmental attitude that is serving him, I think. It serves anybody who can nurture that within themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, he's... he's somewhat follows Richard Bartlett, but a lot of other people too. And I know Rich is a very strong one, not even knowing anything about the person he's helping.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Probably the less you know about a person, the more you can help them. Is that his Richard Bartlett's
idea? I don't think
he
would say that, but he just picked a girl out of the audience at one seminar, and he said it's because she was yawning. And I don't know what he was doing, but he put his hand on her shoulder and then he put his hand on her head, and she sort of bent over sideways in a very, very big angle. Don't know how she managed
mm-hmm.
to do it. And he said he had no idea what was going on, and he asked the audience to repeat, I have no idea what's going on.
Yes, let's talk about Richard Bartlett really quickly for our audience. He is a...
Oh, sorry.
Would you call him a healer? He is...
He doesn't like the word
healer.
He doesn't like healer. He likes transformation.
Transformation.
He thinks if you heal something, you polarize yourself with disease.
Yeah, I think he's right.
So if you treat the if you just deal with the person, then you aren't even looking at where they seem to be
mm-hmm.
congested
mm-hmm.
or blocked, which I can understand that actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, he's kind of like a transformation guy. Yeah. He helps people who are involved in the healing arts.
Well, nevertheless, he is a healer. I mean, no matter how you look at it,
no matter how he
looks at it, you know.
I think there might be a legal thing in there somewhere.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, when he has this ability to touch people and have them be healed, it's almost like he's walking in the same footsteps as Jesus or somebody, who was one of the greatest healers of all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he probably would never say that.
Well, he wouldn't allow himself to say that, but it's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
What I've heard, I have not witnessed anything, although I do know someone who actually attended one of his seminars who actually put his hand on a broken foot and the thing went pop, and the x-ray showed no break at all. So it's, that's someone I know. So
yeah, it is.
And he seems to attract all kinds of people. Doctors go to see him, and they say, he says, "What do you do?" They say, "Well, I was a doctor, but I'm not sure what I am now."
I love that. I think that's kind of like who am I kind of exercise, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, can I swing things back around?
Yes,
can
go
I
ahead.
Ask you what you set out to achieve when you started writing the book, and in retrospect, if you've had any realigning of your aims and how that changed, if at all, during the course of the
Well, I never would have thought. I had an idea that I wanted to create a book out of the 365-day blogging challenge of prayer, but I never thought it. You know how it is, if you've never done it before, it seems overwhelming. So to me, it was like taking the first step, and that's what that was. It was taking the first step, and as time went on, I noticed that there were different themes that ran through the whole blog, the whole prayer body of prayers that I was writing. So that's how I was able to sort out the topics and then put them into a book. And now that it's a book, and it's soon to be published on Kindle, and then we'll move on to a print version. But I feel that, first of all, it has changed me. And I have become more able to have, for want of another word, faith in whatever it is that's taking place is for the good, as opposed to being fearful of the outcomes of anything. And I would say that that's the greatest thing. And then going forward, like we were just saying, doing these 30-day blog challenges will bring focus to the book that will be published, you know, and to get people to know me better. And to also, to me, it's fun to get controversial. And controversy makes people sit up and listen. So as opposed to just writing things that don't stir anything up. So that would be my next step, and doing that maybe for the next year, these 30-day blog challenges. So, and then you know, trying to do other things that promote the book, and maybe teach some classes on prayer, and get myself out there in different ways. So that's basically it. Not really, but it's part of it. You know, it's never totally it, but that's part of it.
Okay. So it wasn't so much that it changed what you hoped to achieve. It's more like it was more, what was striking about it was the transformations you went through, particularly in yourself.
Yes. And it helped me to connect with the beauty that is all around me in nature. And I also started to do this because I knew my two dogs were alive at the time, Lucunda and Ulysses. And I knew that they were getting old, and I knew that that one dog was had a tumor that would probably, I wasn't at the time into fighting for his life, which I did with Ulysses, but I wrote all that stuff down. I think that helps people to, you know, we all, for those of us who really love our dogs and realize that dogs are somehow a extension of, they are the only animals in the whole kingdom of animals, or queendom of animals, that are so close to humans, so close to humans.
Regentdom.
Yes. And so with the Pearl, I've noticed that she I've never met a dog like her. I think it has to do with, I mean, Lucunda and Ulysses were somewhat clueless when it came to the way Pearl is. Because she has figured out all the boundaries of our property. She doesn't go out into the road. She has a natural ability to shy away from things she knows could hurt her. Whereas Lucunda was completely crazed with fearlessness. So that when he was a puppy, even though Pearl as a puppy is a puppy and she does destroy things, but nevertheless, Mookie would chase sheep. We had sheep at the time. He would chase them out of the property. He chased one sheep into the river who swam into the city. We never knew sheep could swim. I never knew a sheep could swim, and he chased. It was like very stressful because he was fearless. But Pearl knows her natural boundaries, and I do believe it's because she was out in the wild. She survived, and because of that, today, for instance, I will just let her do what she wants to do. She has her own life. She goes out. She goes running to the river like Yuli used to do. She actually has taken up sleeping where Yuli used to sleep, and she does things like Yuli used to do. So she'll go down and slop in the river, as we say. She runs around the property, and she does what she wants to do. And I've let it go. The other dogs, you couldn't trust them that way because they were getting into fights. Yuli didn't like other dogs, so he would purposely go and fight with them. He was a little bit of a handful. She is become very easy to live with. So, and these dogs are amazing, and I think it has to do with letting them go. Like, this gentleman was on the program the other night, and he said that dogs if they misbehave, that's something we have to heal within ourselves. It's kind of like Ho'oponopono, you know.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I have a friend here
that with her cat. She healed something in herself, and the cat stopped doing something quite bad.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's you let them be themselves. You don't discipline them. You let them be who they are, and they will flourish. Well, isn't that a lesson that we need to learn about everything and everyone? I mean, we let them go. We don't control them. But anyway, these are the sorts of things I've learned by writing these prayers, these life lessons that are powerful, very powerful for me. Yeah.
Are you going to distill some of the book in the future, maybe? Or are you quite happy for it to be in prose form? I mean, some, like, for instance, Richard Bartlett's issued a series of cards. He has, like, anything from three sentences to two paragraphs on cards.
I think that would be a great idea.
You could just pick one every day, and you could do one for pets.
That would be wonderful, because people love their pets, you know. They really do. And that would be fun. You know, I like to do things that are fun in the creation process, and I think that would be a good product for people. And people have such a fear. This is another thing that is I had to work out, was the fear of the death of these animals. It's quite different, and it's quite traumatic when a dog or a cat you love dies. And the reason being is because they're with you all the time. If you happen to be, you know, home for any length of time, they are with you. And it's when people die, it can be very horrendous. People, of course, but I mean, people have a real hard time with the death of these animals. So I think that imparting some lessons in that regard to help people let go and to heal from that is important.
Hmm.
There's all sorts of things that, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
That we can learn from the death of an animal. So they say that the death of an animal is how teaches children about death, but in reality, it teaches us about death too. But there is no death. I mean, these animals. If you have, you start developing your psychic capabilities. You know, you can see them everywhere, and the fact that Pearl seems to have embodied different characteristics of both of the dogs we recently had. The fact that she sleeps where Yuli sleeps, she runs to the river where Yuli used to, Yuli was really a river dog, and so is she. And you can see how she's picking up. They don't have to be alive, per se, whatever that means, for her to be picking up on them. It's very interesting. So they can teach us about handling their death of all kind, and realize that there is no death. I mean, there is really no death. So that's a very important lesson for all of us to learn.
Yeah. I think we contain the animal, I think, although we don't necessarily understand how to relate to the animal in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
by animal, I don't mean the unruly part of ourselves. I mean simply the template in evolution that came before the human.
Actually, so we are animals.
Well,
we
yeah,
are
that's
animals,
true.
And yeah. So in that way, it's good to confront our own animalness.
Hmm. Well, animal also means spirit, doesn't it? So it's an interesting word.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes, very interesting.
Can I read you a bit of a poem by Mary Oliver? Do you know Mary Oliver's poem "Wild Geese"?
No. Read it.
It's just the first four lines. It relates, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Wow. Does she do short things like that?
It's four lines out of a 16-line poem.
Okay.
It's from the book Dreamwork.
Dreamwork, yeah. Do you think prayers are poetry?
I think they overlap. These words, see, we treat words as very specifically. I suppose we have to, otherwise the whole thing would just become a sea of meaning. But for me, poetry means anything that's written with an evocative energy. So
mm-hmm,
certainly that
mm-hmm.
would include prayer. But poetry has also come to mean something more specific. It's come to mean a sort of secular cultural activity. So it's
mm-hmm,
kind of
mm-hmm.
a little bit split itself off from the prayer tradition. But there's a lot of overlap, of course.
Yes. I think that words... If chosen mindfully, can all be poetry.
Yes. Well, that's what I try and do. Every email and letter I send, I don't like to use standard top and tail. I always like to write something a bit more imaginative.
I do
even
too.
If the whole email
yeah.
is not like that.
I agree.
I started trying to sign my emails differently every time because... And the end of an email has almost become a little mini poem in itself for me.
Mm-hmm.
My current one I like is "Best and Warmest Wishes" because "Warmest Wishes" used to sound like a kind of prelude to wanting to get to know someone better. But if you put "Best and Warmest Wishes," it sort of like amplifies it and it makes it more kind of, what's the word, detached as well.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Well, and it's not the same sort of ending that you normally see, and it makes you realize that there's some thought that went into it.
Yeah. I mean, on my spiritual friends, I might put something like "Waterfalls of Blessings" or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so the spiritual world and the internet marketing world is... You hope that maybe there is some sort of link that goes on there, but a lot of times it's pretty, you know, straight with internet marketing. I think the way that they write their stuff is a turnoff.
It can be. I mean, Joe Vitale is an interesting figurehead in that respect, because he's someone who has been involved in certain kinds of spiritual teachings, like The Secret.
Yes.
And has been trying to, and I think I sense from him, he's trying to uplift the field of marketing, and I respect that. This idea that you don't advertise by trying to make people afraid of what will happen if they don't buy something, which I think is very important. I like that in him. So, you know, there's a whole spectrum of things there. But, you know, selling is a very double-edged sword, the whole art of persuasion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, it can be very good to wake people up out of their, trance, daily trance, and get them to pay attention. I've observed, for instance, even with my friends, if I send them something twice, they still haven't even known what I've sent them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this strange combination, on the one hand, between waking people up to what you're trying to say to them, and on the other hand, the whole thing of not allowing other people to respond in their own way to the existence of something. It's very strange. It's, the delicate act of persuasion can come across differently to different people at different times as well.
That's right. It's one thing to get people to buy my book, but it's quite another to get them to read it.
I see.
Don't you think? That's part of it, yeah.
I have the same thing with music. There are people, quite a few people have bought my album to support me, and I asked them, have they listened to it yet? And they say no, and some of them can't even find it.
Yes.
You know.
I must tell you, I listen to it all the time. I love it.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the way the world is. We have so much to feast on, you know. It's not that surprising that things end up on the bottom of someone's hard disk or the back of their bookshelf sometimes. But, you know, we just have to... The game... One of the nice things about it, even though I don't like the fact one loses income because of it, is that people recycle books they don't read.
Yeah.
You can't do that with a Kindle. You can't do that with a Kindle, but you can do that with physical books and CDs, which is nice. That means they don't waste their existence. They might find a home that is more appropriate for them.
Yes. Well, we live in a world where there's so many books now, so many authors, and so many people clamoring for to be heard, that you can just basically say, well, what good does it do for me to be heard, you know, or for me to write music, or for me to, but that's not the point, you know. I think the point is for us to be creative beings and to create and release it to the world and not really have expectations. I mean, we want people to read it and love it and be changed by it, but we can't expect that will happen. We have to release it to the higher good of everything.
Yes, intention and release.
Yes, and I think we'll be happier if we do that. And the fact is, we have to continue doing what we're doing and not assume that people aren't reading. Like, for instance, somebody was looking...
Yes, it's based on guts, really. A lot of it's based on guts, and the guts is as much the inspiration as the confident marketing, I think.
Somebody was telling me yesterday that she was looking through my virtual book tour, and it didn't seem like anybody was responding. But my feeling is that how do we know whether anybody responded or not just because they didn't say anything or write something?
Well, that's the thing. That's any kind of message is always going to leave more traces than are measurable. That's why one should keep at it, because then those traces that are not measurable will eventually show up in some form.
Exactly. So I was thinking, oh, no, you know, people weren't responding. But I just feel like that's not the point of it. The point is to put it out there and realize that sometimes what you have put out there is making people think, and they may not necessarily just be able to come back with some clever thing to say. You know what I mean? It goes beyond that.
Yes, yes. People don't always articulate what they feel anyway, if they're not used to doing so. There are very few people that can write a blog every day at the moment in this world, and most of them are things that only come out when they're with their friends.
Yes.
Or when
yes.
they're, you know, it's not. But I think any kind of outreach is not, as we were hinting at before when we were talking about whether people get to engage with the material. The important thing is developing either a relationship with the material or with oneself, or both. And if one allows oneself to be drawn up and one's intent to create something valuable, then I think the relationship and the material both evolve.
Yes. Yes.
To be through the commitment as much as anything else.
There's a certain amount of persistence that has to take place, and a certain amount of, perseverance is the word, where you just persevere with. Yeah.
Or we could have a female version. We could have Priscilla Verance.
Yes. And those things are what give us meaning in our own lives.
Yes, yes.
So I think that continuing with what we're doing and what you're doing and what we're all doing is worthy of continuing. You know, it's all good. That was interesting that she said that about, well, there's nobody commenting here, so I don't think it really had any effect. Well, that's interesting that it helped me to articulate my own fears and to move beyond them.
Well, so getting blog comments is doesn't happen to everybody, so if you get a few, that's really something. Also, what you could do, you could have another blog page where you list all the links of your 21 pages. That also
yes.
will have some impact because it will show people the magnitude of your outreach.
Yeah, I already did that, except I think we're going to put it in a different format because it looks too...
Web page,
too,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe into a calendar or something. So I think that will help because it helps people to revisit it. So it's all good. It's all good. I could actually list the whole virtual book tour on Facebook. That'd be an interesting exercise.
You could, yes. There's a page called Notes where you can write longer pieces of text.
That's
and you
right.
Can link, or I think the link is automatic from your wall.
I remember that. I forgot about that. Actually, one of my blogs went automatically into Notes, but I haven't done that with the other blogs. So, you know, Facebook is
I don't
a
like automatic too much. I like to control how things appear. That's my
yes.
personal view.
Yes. And if you just line them up, it looks too linear somehow. It has a linear feeling to it, which is really not what it is. It's not linear at all. Yeah, it's like prayer is more of a cycle feeling to it. And linear time is really not happening there. So,
what do you think of the major aspects of prayer? I could so far I've managed to get two. One is the idea of asking or receiving. Another one is being in a state of communion with the deeper self.
Mm-hmm.
And have you other images that you could?
You mean from the book?
Either from the book or from yourself.
Okay. Certainly. It's a way of slowing down in contemplation is to me the most important thing. In a spirit of solitude, getting away from the hustle bustle of the world, as it were, and just going off and not necessarily thinking, but allowing life experience to flow through you so that you can fathom it and process it You know, that's the thing. We are going too fast in this society, and people don't even have a chance to understand what is happening in their lives. They don't even get a chance to see the parallel relationships. What's the common word that we use with things that recur, and you don't understand why they're recurring? Patterns that we need to get a hold of in order to transform. People don't have a chance to even look at their own lives to see where we need to go next. And this is what prayer does. You know, it helps you to slow down, to reflect, that's a good word, to recapitulate and to create conscious decisions about where you want to go next. And
so if we are like a kind of mirror to the divine, then if we go fast, what happens to the reflection of the divine?
Don't you think it just gets lost?
I'm not sure. I think it becomes clouded, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can still be there, but it maybe isn't as...
Well, I mean, it gets lost to the individual. They may have lost it. It's not that it's really lost. There is a distinction there. So that the person...
Well, that's quite a statement, isn't it, that we are a reflection of the divine. That's a big statement.
Yeah, and it also means that there's nothing to fear at all. You know, always there's another opportunity. When one door closes, the other one opens, kind of thing. Well, you have to... Let's face it, you have to experience certain things in order to believe them. You can't just, I read someplace that this is the way it works. You have to experience it to know that that's the way it works.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't really experience it if you're not slowing down and purposely meditating prayerfully about whatever it is that's going on.
Yes. Yes, there's certainly a dialogue, and what you were talking about being in nature is important, that we learn to engage with a part of ourselves which is not incessant, but is actually quite expansive and perfumed and making us aware of the scents around us. Particularly, we had a very warm day yesterday in London.
Mm.
Everywhere I went, there was a different aroma coming from each garden I walked past. It was much more aware than usual because I haven't experienced it for a while. It's been very gray and rainy here.
Yes.
Well,
I'm glad to hear the weather is turning. Good, the weather is turning, finally.
Yes.
Very cool. I know, so that's the thing. You don't experience, like when we had to go, I had to take a certain recertification test. And you can see it with Pearl. I had to put her into a kennel. So she was pretty much confined in this kennel. And the guy who owns the kennel took her for a few walks. It's not like she was so confined that she didn't take a walk. But so when she came home, you could tell that she completely appreciated everything even more powerfully than she ever had. You know, she went around. She appreciates the fact that we're letting her go, that she's free, and she's become more of a mature dog just overnight because of it. I think, you know, all around us, if we don't, we can appreciate the power of appreciation is also a prayer, for sure. And you know, that has become kind of overworked, that thankfulness, appreciation, gratitude thing. But really, it is a kind of core. Foundational reason for living is to be grateful for it all.
Well, in the Sufi, in the Islamic tradition, Yashakur is the grateful one, is one of the names of God. So, in one sense, one is, if one understands gratitude in the deeper sense, one is actually getting in touch with the divine quality, which ultimately is a way to become more godlike. Dare one suggest such a thing?
Yes, I believe it.
And the dog is also a symbol for you because you're letting your fears out. You're not attending to your fears. That's a beautiful symbol for you, I think.
That is a good symbol. I've had a lot of trauma surrounding death of dogs that I don't touch upon in the book, but, you know, 8 or 10 of the dogs were shot by a hateful, by somebody who hated hippies, and he himself had become very hateful. That was about 28 years ago, so it took me 28 years to get, that was about 32 years ago. It took me about 20, I don't know how long ago it was, but I forgot, I just didn't get another dog for a long, long time. And to let Pearl just do what she wants to do is a huge step for me. You know, I have to trust in her innate ability to take care of herself because she had done so well from October to January doing that. And she doesn't want to be restrained because she had been out in the wild for so long. And now she, for me to just let her go and do what she wants to do is a huge step for me. And I know that she'll take care of herself. Because she is. Yeah, we have to get rid of our fears, you know. Certain fears are beneficial. I mean, you can't just decide that all fear is bad. There are certain fears that help us along the way to be more discerning. You know, you have intuition about certain things that aren't going to help you. But that's not the kind of fear I mean. It's like just letting go of the things of the past, you know.
Pamela Wilson has a very nice way of dealing with all that. She says that if we are boundless space, if we are a boundless space, what place does fear have?
It's giving
us certain kind of services that we really become prehistoric or dinosauric, you know? But we should be gracious and we should thank them for being so diligent. I don't know if you remember Ariel in the Midsummer Night's Dream.
Mm-hmm.
He was always rushing here and rushing there to help his master. But then he basically gets set free and he doesn't know what to do with himself.
Right.
But he is liberated, though, which is good.
Yes.
And Pamela has this nice way of dealing with it, but these characters in ourselves that are trying to protect us. Meanwhile, we should thank them and you know, we should ask them if they would like some time off. You know.
Yes. Yeah, because they need time off too.
I like individuals. If you meet them, you don't just want to talk work. You want to say, you know. How's it going, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I think work is good to get off that topic. Work.
Okay, all right. Whoops. We have two and a half minutes. Is there anything we should talk about as a finality or as a conclusion? Or?
Well, I think that I appreciate thank you very much for taking an hour out of your day for this. And actually, it's been quite enlightening, fun. And I appreciate it, really. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's uplifting to talk to you, Kate. And I'm very happy to have you get be my first guest blogger.
Oh, thank you. And you're going to put this in your blog. I can hardly wait to see it.
Sure. It's going to go on joyphilosophy.org.
What is it
called? Joyphilosophy is my... the site is called joyphilosophy.org. It's the word joyful.
Joy philosophy?
Yes.
Let's see, joyphilosophy.org.
No, joy philosophy, all one word, joyphilosophy.
Gotcha. Okay, that'll be fun.
I'll be up there in a few minutes. I've already loaded it onto WordPress.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much, Lawrence. I appreciate it very much. And love to you.
Great.
And we will... talk again.
We'll talk soon, yes. thanks for the enlightening hour. Thanks for a very nice, what's the word? Well of inspiration.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And many prayer prescriptions for you today, and love to you.
And lots of love. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Kate. Bye-bye.